Hey, welcome to another Thursday edition of Sports Look here on K Radio. It is good to have you with us. Also good to have our great Sports Look sponsors, Exchange Bank, Gerber Electric, Hamada Wealth Management, and Taco John's. The upcoming sports schedule here on Care Radio, as we are going to be talking about through the program here this evening, shifts to basketball. And Saturday, we have a Benedictine ladies game here on Care Radio. The Benedictine Lady Ravens are going to be hosting College of the Ozarks. It'll be a Saturday 5:30 game from the Nolan. And then next Tuesday, it will be the Benedictine women hosting Columbia. Another 5:30 game. So Lady Ravens Saturday, Lady Ravens Tuesday. We'll have a week off next week. We'll wish you a happy Thanksgiving week next week. And Gus, high school football playoffs are way underway. And we are now down to, as they call them, the final four. Games coming up this weekend to determine the participants in the state championships.
Isn't that crazy? The next time that we're back on, we'll be talking about, you know, the state champions in each division. And real quick, let's look at the action that was last Friday night and where we're at now going forward. Starting at the biggest classification, we'll go to 6A. Blue Valley Northwest knocks off Olathe North, and they will be playing now Blue Valley West. So Northwest versus Blue Valley West on the bottom half of the bracket. Wow. Derby holds off Free State 27-21. Now they'll get the Chessy Lions, as Lawrence had no problem upending Manhattan 41-22. You've got Derby and Lawrence. This should be a fantastic matchup. Winner goes to the state title game. That game at Derby.
How often, as you said, Lawrence beats Manhattan? Aren't there other teams in Lawrence and Manhattan that play each other once in a while in some kind of sports? I'm trying to remember if they've got any history like that. I don't know.
Cricket, maybe?
Maybe. Well, anyway, yes, Derby, the three-time defending state champion, still alive in the hunt for the title in Class 6A. Class 5A saw Mill Valley over Blue Valley Southwest and St. Thomas Aquinas advancing to the semifinals with a win over DeSoto. Neither of those games particularly close. Mill Valley will be at home with STA Friday.
Is it a little surprising, though, that Mill Valley and St. Thomas Aquinas haven't played yet this year?
It is kind of. Right? Not that far apart.
Yeah, and especially with Aquinas and Mill Valley, both of those teams play a lot of different schools, you know, competitive type schools, but Randy Dreiling has St. Thomas Aquinas, the Saints right now at 7-4, so.
In the bottom half, the west half of the bracket, in 5A, it will be the battle of Sedgwick County, Capon, Mount Carmel, and Mays will be playing one another. Capon knocked off Northwest, and Mays over Hayes last Friday. And again, a couple of games that were very close. Capon winning 38-35 with a heroic last-moment field goal, and it was Hayes losing by one score.
Yeah, so you got Mays coming into the game at 9-2. You've got...
Is that me?
Yeah, you got Capon at 10-1. So... You talk about those two teams coming in pretty good right now, and jumping now down to smaller class, Class 4A, and we'll start seeing some teams a little closer to home.
Yeah, it's like you got St. James Academy, who rolled Piper 31-7 last week. They're going to be up against Bishop Miege, who had no trouble with Eudora, the team we'd seen a couple of weeks ago. Eudora losing 21-6 to Miege. Miege and St. James Academy, one of them will be in the title game.
Yeah, and isn't it crazy that those two teams haven't played each other, right? Miege coming into the ball game. How about this? At 5-6 right now under head coach John Holmes. So if they get to the state title game, they'll get back to 500.
Yes. The only way they can be above 500 this year is to win the state title.
To win the state title.
So, yes.
Not very often can you say that, right? A team has to win the state title to get themselves back over 500. In the bottom half of the bracket, you're going to have Andover Central traveling to Bueller. Bueller, a 7-0 win over Mulvane last week, and Andover Central had no problems with Red Raiders beating Wamego 48-0.
So those should be great games. Talking about great games, how about Class 3A? Man, Frontenac knocks off Rock Creek by nearly 20, and Holton the Wildcats still in it, and they are in looking for a return to the state title game. They blanked Girard last week, 36-0. So Frontenac and Holton in the east half of the bracket.
Frontenac at 9-2, Holton under head coach Brooks Barta, a perfect 11-0. Should be a fun matchup down in Frontenac this weekend.
West half of the bracket, it is Andale defeating Concordia 54-14, southeast of Saline over Cheney 34-28. So it will be Andale, the Andale Indians, and the southeast of Saline Trojans meeting in that matchup.
How about this? In class 3A, you have four teams left. Three of those teams are 11-0, and you've got the 9-2 team, Frontenac, hosting this week. So some pretty good teams left, right?
Yeah, and southeast of Saline, just in case you're wondering where they're at, one of your favorite towns, Gypsum, Kansas. So I'm thinking they must make a lot of sheetrock there. I don't know that.
How about now we jump down to Class 2A. Rossville, no problem over Riverton last week, 56-14. And, well, it's going to be a rematch of the War on 24 as Silver Lake gets by Wellsville 33-27. So just held on to win that game. So Silver Lake will be at Rossville. In the bottom half of the bracket, it was Beloit sneaking past Hillsboro 32-27, and Kingman, no problems over Hayes TMP. So Beloit will get to host Kingman next week.
And four, how about Kingman, man? 10-1, 5-0 in the district, 5-1 champions of the Central Plains League. They lost the first game of the year to Cheney. Since then, they've been on a 10-game winning streak, and they have not given up a lot of points in that. Their defense has been playing outstanding.
Yeah, one of the assistant coaches and a basketball coach down there at Kingman, Drew Craxner.
Is that right? Is that where Drew's at today? Good for him.
How about jumping down to Class 1A, and you got to see a good game Friday night.
Yes, we saw a tremendous game with Jefferson County North at Opie, and so for Opie, it was a win at home. They bumped off JCN. Centralia defeated Linden in a high-scoring 53-22 battle. So it'll be Opie traveling to Centralia. Opie now the winners of 20 consecutive games and the defending state champions in Class 1A. Bottom half of the bracket, it was Inman over Conway Springs and Sedgwick defeated Smith Center. If there's a better game around the state of Kansas, I can't imagine what it was, as Sedgwick wins 49-48 over Smith Center. Had to be a fantastic game.
So, again, now you have, what, three of the four remaining teams are undefeated. The only team not is Centralia. They are at 8-2. But, yeah, you've got Opie, Inman, Sedgwick, all undefeated.
Opie's losses, by the way, come to teams, or rather Centralia's losses come to teams like Rossville in week one of the year. I mean, you jump up to that division and lose to a team that's still in the hunt for a state title, so that's not terrible.
And I think the one that they probably scratch their head a little bit is that Waubunsee game, right?
Can't imagine how they gave up that many points to a Waubunsee team, losing that one 45-40. But that all said, congratulations to Centralia, and they will have their hands full with a really good Opie team who now has given up still 12 points on the season. So a fantastic outing right there for them. So, hey, pick out your teams, follow them down to the final four. Winners of these are in the hunt for the state championship next week. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back. More Sports Look right after this. As we return here on Sports Look, the Heart of America Athletic Conference football is over for the Benedictine Ravens, and they finished the season, guys, with a really nice mark at 7-4. We're going to be talking a little later in the program with Raven head football coach Joel Osborne, and 7-4, 3-2 in district play. The Ravens, of course, had higher aspirations, but you got to be very candid here. A lot of things changing, a lot of things fluid in the season with the new coaching staff and a lot of new things being put into play. And a conference with some pretty good teams, I thought there was a shot at, you know, maybe even three making it into the postseason. Two of them did. But that said, 7-4. How many teams around the country would like to be 7-4?
Yeah, I think that's the problem. Like, we're kind of spoiled, and we've talked about it on broadcast. How often do we talk about how spoiled as Ravens fans we are? Because, you know, 7-4, it's a great season. You should be really happy with that. But, you know, I mean, we always look back, and I think if you talk to Coach Osborne, he'd say that the Peru State game was probably the real one that got away. Central Methodist, you had a really good shot at them in that ball game, but again, Central Methodist got a freshman quarterback, kid knows how to win, and they just found a way to win at the end of that ball game. So again, you can't take anything back. You're going to be happy with 7-4, and again, you had a lot of young pieces this year on the team that really stepped up. I mean, what, 9-11 freshmen played this year that, you know, and we're not just talking got in on a special teams play. I mean, we're talking those were some real contributors to this team. So, you know, you're bringing back some really crucial parts to this team coming forward next year.
Yeah, no question about that. And so congratulations to the Ravens. It was a great season.
Yeah, a great season. You developed a lot of talent. And coming into next year, I mean, Baker loses a lot of pieces. Central Methodist is going to lose a lot of pieces. And so, you know, for the Ravens, be interesting to see. But, yeah, probably looking to be one of those front runners in the South Division next year. But there were a few teams that made it to the playoffs out of the Heart of America Athletic Conference. One of them, no surprise, one of them. Had I told you this in August, you would have laughed.
Yeah. Never dreamed we were going to see Central Methodist in a postseason, but you know what? With the way that they played, I am totally down with this, and congratulations again to them. They did what they needed to do.
Yeah, and we were a little worried that maybe they were going to be on the outside looking in, and that wasn't going to be fair, but in the final polls, they jumped all the way up to number 13 in the country, and so they were able to make it in, and you look at Central Methodist, not a bad roadie this weekend. They're going to go up to Orange City
Yep. And
take on Northwestern.
Yep, the Red Raiders, always good, really good at home. And again, you talk about teams that are in there a lot. We do this all the time. They are one of those teams. Central Methodist is kind of one of those outliers. It's like, I can't even imagine when the last time Central Methodist found themselves in the postseason. So they're going to have that Orange City trip. Not a bad trip at all. And we'll wish them very, very well. Tough environment, hard place to play up there.
I love how the NAIA does the playoffs, right? Like, hey, here's what time you're starting games, right? Like, they're all noon, except for somehow Lindsey Wilson hosting Montana Western is a 12:30 game, but every other game's a 12 o'clock in the time zone it is, right? The only one that's an 11 o'clock our time is at Kaiser at Reinhardt, Georgia, but that's also because it's in the Eastern time zone, so it is noon, 11, and again, I like the way the NAIA does the playoffs. Taking a look at the matchups, the defending national champion, Lindsey Wilson, finished the season undefeated. They're going to host number 16, Montana Western. That's a 12:30 Central Time game. Number 2, Morningside, perfect at 10-0, hosting Ottawa out of Arizona.
Yeah.
Right? They're the Fire, the Phoenix, or something as well.
The Phoenix, the OUAZ.
Yeah. Number 3, Grandview, 11-0. They're going to host number 14, Dickinson State, out of North Dakota. So the top 3 seeds were the only undefeated teams. A little surprising we only had 3 undefeated teams.
Yes. It's, I don't know why, but yes, I would say that I'm surprised by it. Because typically there are going to be twice that many.
Yeah, I was going to say 5, 6, 7 a lot of times. Yeah. Because that's what's tough in the NAIA is, unless you're ranked early on in the season, it's tough to kind of break that barrier at the top because, you know, those teams play schedules that just don't really afford them really many losses.
No, and we talk about it all year. You can't afford to lose games. Certainly can't afford to lose one late. And, again, Central Methodist back on them. They did not lose late. I mean, they ran through the last part of the schedule, kind of went through that gauntlet once they gotten by Grandview early in the year when they played, you know, cross-division games. And so they were able to win the right games.
Yep. I mean, winning the right games at the right time is huge. We talked about a moment ago, Northwestern, the number 4 team, is going to be at home with Central Methodist. How about a newcomer to the NAIA playoffs, and that's going to be Indiana Wesleyan at 9-1. They're the number 5 seed. They're going to host Kansas Wesleyan. So KW, the number 10 team at 10-1, is going to be What? They must have lost that last game to Southwestern then, didn't they?
They did.
Yeah. So, see, because they were a top five team. Now, instead of being at home, looks like they're going to probably be on the road for most of these playoffs. They are going to Indiana Wesleyan. Reinhardt is home with Kaiser. That should be a fantastic matchup. Marion, Indiana is home with Southwestern Kansas. Southwestern hasn't been to the playoffs since 1999, I believe. And then a former opponent that we're somewhat familiar with, Concordia, Michigan, is going to be home with St. Xavier, Illinois.
So a lot of great football coming up. It's going to be kind of fun. It'll be a little sad to be not having one particular team to be cheering for, but it should be really fun to watch those NAIA playoffs as the season goes on.
Going to put you on the spot.
Go for it.
Who wins it all?
Lindsey Wilson.
Okay.
I think they run through.
Okay. You can't really, like, debate against that. I mean, I think if you were to say Lindsey Wilson or Morningside, you're probably not going to go wrong in this year's playoffs. Because here's the deal. I don't have as much faith in Grandview this year as I did probably with last year's team. I thought they were a little better. You know, Grandview is a all-or-nothing team this year, right? I mean, they lose a lot of pieces going into next year's team. I think Johnny Sullivan's really one of the few pieces they're going to bring back for next year's team. So if I were him, I'd probably go ahead and walk this year, too.
But don't you think that's going to be the case for a lot of teams for next year, you know, with the guys who are getting
with
that extra year?
COVID year, yeah.
You know, I would suspect that a lot of teams are going to find a lot of personnel turnover as they come into the 22 football season. Hey, as we're talking about college sports and the Benedictine Ravens, huge hats off and congratulations to the Benedictine Lady Ravens basketball team as they traveled to Lee Arena last night and Gus defeat Washburn University on their field last night, on their court last night.
Wow, good.
Lady Ravens winning 64-61. Over Washburn last evening. It was a nip and tuck ball game. I mean, I was kind of following it as it was going along. Lady Ravens found themselves, they were way down early after the end of a quarter, kind of battled back, and then it was back and forth through the rest of the ball game. Allie Brzozowski, 17 for Benedictine last night. And you know where Allie gets her points? I mean, she was 4 of 10 from the floor because she has, you know, that shot kind of falling away, but what she did so well, got fouled a lot. 9 of 10 at the free throw line. If you can hit 9 free throws, you can get yourself into double figures pretty easy.
Yeah, I was going to say, especially knocking down those free throws. How big is that?
Huge.
You know, you start looking at the Heart of America Athletic Conference on the ladies' side, there are a lot of wins already chalked up for these teams. The one that just blows my mind, how about this? Here we are at November 18th, right? Peru State has played 9 games already on the ladies' side. Huh? They are 5-4. But you've got Grandview at 5-1, Culver at 4-1, Clark at 5-2. You've got Central Methodist undefeated, Park undefeated, Benedictine at 5-1. The shocker for me, maybe right now, is Mid-America, right? The Mid-America ladies, 2-3 overall right now.
Now, if you got scores pulled up last night, Mid-America began the conference season in the Heart of America Athletic Conferences. They had Baker last night, men's and women's basketball. And I don't know if you've got that anywhere nearby there.
Yeah. Last night in the Heart of America Athletic Conference on the ladies' side, it was Mid-America. No real problem with Baker. 65-45 winners of that ball game. So Baker again struggling. Mid-America having no problem. The Pioneers just flying through some of their numbers right now. How about Trishelle Smith had 24 tonight? Lydia Ostensen comes off the bench for 23 points. Like, it's not bad when you can go to the bench and bring in 23. Now, you want to flip gears to the men's side?
Sure. And last night, it was the Mid-America guys. They had no trouble. They knocked off Baker 78-55. So, you had a 20-plus point win for Coach Lamar in his swan song season.
Yeah, I wonder, you know, if Hedrick had a gift or something at the game for him.
Maybe.
You go through some games going on around the Heart of America Athletic Conference. On Tuesday night, we had kind of a rare split in the conference as William Penn and Peru State played each other. I'm not really sure why that was, but William Penn men coming away with an 89-86 win over Peru State. You know what that tells you?
No, because I'm confused, because does that tell me that Peru's better than I thought, or Penn's not as good as I thought?
Yeah, it maybe tells you that Peru's a little better than you were anticipating coming into the year. Well, maybe not. I'm looking at now their overall record, 1-5. So,
yeah.
Taking a look at the men's side, you've got Penn at 6-0, Culver Stockton at 6-0.
There you go.
A little interesting there. You've got Central Methodist at 6-0, Benedictine at 5-1, Park at 5-1, Valley at 4-1, Mid-America at 5-3. So, I mean, you've got some teams that are chalking up some of these wins early on, and I think maybe for me, one of the question mark teams is going to be, first of all, Culver Stockton at 6-0. I mean, again, you knock off six wins, it's going to help your winning percentage at the end of the season, no matter what you do. But Central Methodist, I don't know that I expected them to be a real contender this year. Again, without really diving too deep into their statistics, starting 6-0. Benedictine and Park are kind of what we thought they were going to be, right? Both strong teams, 5-1. Missouri Valley, can't really figure them out at only 4-1. But Baker, starting the season off 3-4. Graceland, 2-4.
The Benedictine men this weekend are going to be traveling up to Peru, Nebraska, but not to play the Bobcats, but they're going to be playing in a classic up there. On Friday night, the Ravens have a 6 o'clock ball game with Missouri Baptist, and then on Saturday, Benedictine will have a 4 o'clock game with the team that they met in the first round of the NAIA National Tournament last year, Central Baptist. So the Raven guys are going to go through a classic before they come back and then, you know, get to the Thanksgiving break, and then we'll be looking at conference ball for them very, very shortly.
Yeah, how big is it to play some of those national contender type teams? You know, you get to kind of size yourself up with the Central Baptist already. You know, Monday night you see Harris Stowe going to travel to Park. I think those are two teams that typically find themselves in Kansas City, you know, at the end of the season. So, yeah. Benedictine Tuesday, they're going to turn around and go to John Brown and take on JBU. So you're talking about some really good teams. It's great to, you know, get those non-cons in there.
So there you have it. We have Raven basketball, like you say, coming up here on Care Radio on Saturday and on Tuesday with the Lady Ravens, and the BC guy is out of town at a classic up in Peru. So lots of college stuff going on. Get to some of those games. We'll be back. We're going to talk to Coach Osborne. Get a little review of the season. Sport Look continues right after this. Got Joel Osborne with us, head coach of the Benedictine Ravens. Coach, season has come to an end, and really, we might just look back at that last game. Tremendous outing for your guys in the final game last week.
Yeah, I was proud of our kids. You know, we felt like we could have probably played a little bit better game overall as a team. We gave up a lot of yards and points, and just we didn't finish the way we wanted to finish there, I know, defensively. But, you know, proud of the kids because they kept playing. It was a back-and-forth game, high-scoring affair. I thought offensively we played really well. We lulled there in the second and third quarter at times. But, you know, we had a really good outing, and, you know, just really proud of the way we finished our season, because we're sitting there at 5-4 and really didn't know what direction we're going to go, and go down to Evangel and beat them at their place, which we hadn't done since 2016, and then turn around and beat a very, very talented MNU team, as you could see.
7-4, the final record on the season. You know, everybody wants to be 11-0, but you know what? Most of the teams in the country would take 7-4.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And, you know, you look at, we've had a lot of success around here for sure. So, we definitely want to, raise the bar though, you know, moving forward. So, we feel like, we're a couple plays away, you know, in two games specifically from being 9-2, you know, but, at the same time though, you know, you can't look back and, there's no regrets. That's the biggest thing. We don't have any regrets, and, our kids prepared. They played hard. There's some things we can definitely learn from this last season, to make us better for next year and in the coming years. And, No, we're just looking forward to the off season now, getting started with recruiting and developing our kids.
Talk about the learning curve, first year as a head coach. I mean, there's a learning curve for you, for the staff, for the players, and everything. All in all, now that it's that the season has concluded, did it go like you kind of thought? Was it what you thought it was going to be?
You know, I think there's definitely was like I was. Thought it was going to be at times, and at times I definitely think there were some bumps in the road where I didn't anticipate a few things, but that's going to happen every year, but I'm really pleased with like where we are as a program as far as our buy-in. Our staff's done a great job of being open to new ideas, and really working with our kids and being very relatable to the kids and making sure that our kids feel comfortable being in our facility and playing in our program. And the other thing too is I feel like our, just from a complete standpoint, you look at our strength program. I mean, our Coach Arnold and Rulin did a great job there this summer. We had 70 guys here this summer, and so that's a big deal. And they've done a great job, and they're developing our kids as well. So, and then if you look at our team, we're pretty young at certain spots, and we had a lot of young guys playing this year. So, we definitely saw a lot of growth and development from them. So next year they'll already be they'll be a year older and. So looking for big things out of those guys next year.
One guy that you're going to miss, and you're going to miss a lot of the guys who graduate, no question about that, as you always do, Jalen James O. He wrote a chapter of his own in the record books.
Yeah, there's no doubt. Jalen is a heck of a player, great person, really good leader, and we'll miss him dearly. I mean, not many guys in college football have over 400 career tackles, and Jalen is a first-class person, so... really proud of him and really appreciative that he came back to play another year. And what's interesting about Jalen is most people don't know is he was working a full-time job as a correctional officer during the season. He'd work 3 days a week, the 2 a.m. to 3 p.m. shift, and then he'd come – or excuse me, the 3 a.m. to 2 p.m. shift, and then he'd come to our position meetings and practice, and you wouldn't even notice it. So, but he's very, very dedicated, committed, he's going to do great things moving forward.
You mentioned you got a lot of great guys coming back, but there are always, gaps to fill and new players to bring into the program. Tell me about recruiting. How's that go? And, how is recruiting done in this day and age? It's modern and the technology has changed a lot of things.
Yeah, the thing that doesn't change is you have to replace people with people, right? So, we're losing four of our five starters on the offensive line. That's going to be a big area. We've got to develop within our program. We got to go out and try to find some kids that can help us immediately. We got to have I was really pleased with our high school recruiting class last year on the O-line. So we've got to find another really good high school class. I think defensively, we've got to find depth at about every position. The D-line is where you want to be strong at, and that's where we've got to continue to find guys that are going to step up and play. And I really think that our freshman class is good. They're a good bunch of good players there. We got guys that played young, and we also have guys that are true freshmen that are developing there too. But in terms of how the recruiting works, so those are the two areas I feel like are the most important. In terms of how the recruiting works these days is, it really starts, back 9-10 months ago in February after the initial signing date for last year's class, and you start gathering names and contact information. And, there's this website called Huddle that everybody has their film on, so you can look anybody's film up on Huddle. You don't have to do DVDs like you did do. 10 years ago, or VHS tapes like you did when I was in high school. But you still, the process is you talk with the recruit, you talk with the high school coach to get a background check, to get a character reference, to get transcripts. You try to go see them in person, meet their family. You try to get them on campus, get them to camp, get them on a visit, whether it's a game day visit or an official visit. And just try to see if you're a match. That's the biggest thing, is see if you can find a match. So, and then, from the start, you got to know what you're looking for. So for us, we're looking for guys who are going to come in here and, going to do things the right way, guys who are trustworthy, guys who are looking to get a complete education, grow their faith, guys who want to play football at a high level. So, if you don't know who you are and what you're looking for, then you really don't know where to go from there. So you got to know that first, and that's the biggest thing. And then from there, you got to have something to sell, and I feel like we have a great product to sell here at Benedictine College. It's a high-level football, but also, high-level education where you get to grow your faith, and it's very unique, especially in the United – just anywhere, really. It's a unique place.
Coach, so it sounds like, Quinn, it's all said and done. When the technology is figured in and all of this, it still comes down to personal relationships and yes. meeting people and looking them in the eye and, you know, and knowing who they are.
Yeah, there's no doubt. Because so when times get tough, people can easily quit if they don't feel like they have a personal relationship with you. But those personal relationships are what, you know, keeps everything together. So that's the biggest thing, and that's what takes time. And I feel like that's why Coach Wilcox had such great success over the years, is because he was here the whole time, you know, and he had those relationships with those kids. So now it's going to be me developing those relationships with the kids that we have and our staff as well. And, you know, there's no secret. That's the way you do it.
And I was just going to go into that, the staff. I mean, there's, you know, you're one guy and you can talk to a lot of people, but, you know, mm-hmm. you got to have that surrounding group, you know, just like the rest of the team out of the field. You got to have that team here in the coaching staff.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And we do. And so what that is, that's the multiplier effect. So just like in sales, you want to be able to multiply yourself, you know, you want to duplicate yourself. And if you can do that, which I feel like we have great coaches and they're doing a really good job recruiting. They're bringing really good players and people to the table. So, you know, the biggest thing is if we can get guys here on campus and their families, this place will sell itself.
So, Coach, bottom line, final analysis, happy with last year?
Happy, not satisfied. So, definitely so. But, you know, a lot of things we can get better at, that's for sure. But, you know, we graduated 20 seniors, and those guys are – great kids, great human beings. They're going to contribute well to this, to our country and to their communities and their families. They're going to be great leaders. And, that's the biggest thing that I'm going to take away from this year is those guys are going to do great things.
Coach, is it kind of silly that guys like me are already excited for next year?
No. I'm fired up, Tom. I'm glad you are too.
Coach, we appreciate your time, man. Again, congratulations on a grand first season at the helm, and we look forward to lots more of them.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
On Sports Look, we like to talk about some of the things going on around the area in the more of a national light, and the Kansas City Chiefs. Gus, here's the deal. National pundits, the talking heads, all of these folks, 3-4 weeks ago, they had written Kansas City off as a team that had completely underperformed. They were out of everything. They were in deep, deep trouble, and nobody knew what was wrong with them. 3 weeks later, the Chiefs are now the number one team in the division. They're thinking that there's a possibility of maybe losing one game, maybe rolling on, you know, through the rest of the season. Some of their opponents are not doing as well that are coming up on the schedule, and Kansas City is playing well, and they defeat the Raiders, you know, in a big game. And they've knocked off the Packers, and they're playing way better.
Yeah, you know, winning is a cure-all, isn't it?
Nothing better.
Yeah, I'm telling you. And Sunday night, the Raiders just looked like a team that didn't have a clue. Kansas City was able to, you know, beat them on a lot of different facets. Kansas City coming away with a 41-14 win, prime time. And I'm going to tell you what that game probably did more so for the Chiefs than anything. Primetime game, everybody's eyes are on it because nobody else is playing. Those players that played the afternoon games, they're turning on football. And they're going, uh-oh. Right? I mean, because yep. Kansas City just looked good. Whether it was a mirage or not, now for the rest of the season, those teams are going to have that in the back of their mind of, man, watch out. And see, I think if you kind of look at the schedule for Sunday, the Sunday night game is the Steelers-Chargers. Can I tell you, if Kansas City wins over Dallas in the early game, the 3:20 game on Sunday, the Chargers will lose to the Steelers because I think that will be the...
They'll hear the footsteps?
Yeah, I mean, it's like, uh-oh, they are for real. So, I mean, Kansas City played well. Patrick Mahomes took for the football. You know, Tommy Townsend's got a cannon on him. And, I mean, just everything worked for Kansas City last week. But now you have a huge hurdle in front of you right before the bye. And that's the Dallas Cowboys. It's 7-2. It should be a fun one at Arrowhead. It's going to be kind of that mid-afternoon, not so much prime time, but the big billing type game.
And you know what? These two teams have a great history, you know, that goes way back. They don't play all that often. And when they do, it becomes a big deal. And this year, it's an even bigger deal because you got a Dallas Cowboys team that, let's face it, they might be playing as good a football as anybody.
Yeah, Dallas is 7-2, and one of those losses, I don't think they understand, I don't think many people can figure it out, was that home loss to the Broncos where, I mean, it was so bad that the national TV stations pulled it for any other game, right? I mean, but Dallas is a really good team for Kansas City. I think this is going to be a struggle for them. Dallas does a lot of things well that Kansas City struggles at. But the big thing for Kansas City right now is their defense is starting to figure some things out and get a little better, and I think that is going to help them in the grand scheme of things.
And you've got Dallas trying to prepare. This is going to be played at Arrowhead. You've got Dallas who is now, are you ready for this? They are practicing with speakers issuing out crowd noise to try to simulate the kind of environment that they're going to be running into as they come into to Arrowhead on Sunday. So I think that's kind of telling.
Right. Everybody talks about this Dallas offense and how well it's playing, right? Dak Prescott has thrown for 2,300 yards. Patrick Mahomes, 2,900 yards. Dak Prescott, 20 touchdowns, 5 interceptions. Patrick, 25 touchdowns, 10 interceptions. Zeke Elliott has 663 yards and 7 touchdowns, but Darrell Williams has 343 and 4 rushing touchdowns. Here's what just boggles my mind, right? If you were a Kansas City fan, does it feel like Tyreek's having a very good season at all?
You don't feel like it.
Right, because I feel like for three games, you just didn't even hear from Tyreek. How about this? CeeDee Lamb has 726 receiving, Tyreek, 855. 6 touchdowns for CeeDee Lamb, 8 touchdowns for Tyreek Hill. Kansas City is favored in this thing, and maybe the one thing that's going to come back and a lot of people are going to look at right now, the Cowboys without their kicker Greg Zuerlein still on the COVID list.
Now, you put all of this stuff aside. I heard the best interview with Jerry Jones a couple of days ago.
Okay, see, I've heard of the interview.
I have not heard it.
It
was fantastic, as he talked about the Preston Road Trophy. Okay, this is what's at stake between these two games. You know, you talk about there's the hatchet game and there's, you know, all of these games with mm-hmm. these little traveling trophies between two teams, no matter what else is going on in their season. Dallas and Kansas City have the Preston Road Trophy. And what this is a trophy that Lamar Hunt built. He made it. According to Jerry Jones, it looks a little like a birdhouse. They used to live as next-door neighbors on Preston Road in Dallas, okay? According to Jerry, they lived about, as a dog walks, probably, you know, 200 feet apart from front door to one house to front door of another. And Lamar made this trophy, and the winner of the game, and this is an annual game because it may be 5, 6, 7 years, you know, between games, and you don't get to, you know, you get to hold that trophy all of that length of time. And so He presented it to Jerry after the first time, and so Jerry Jones says, this really means a lot to him, and now Clark Hunt is kind of carrying on the tradition. Apparently, one time Jerry had some friends over to his house, and he goes, man, I'd tell him this, my friends, a story about this. We'd like to see the trophy. And Lamar goes, you know, Jerry, I don't know about that. It's not the spirit of it, but I tell you what, I'll let you have it, but you got to have it back by midnight. And then the next time he asked him to show some of his friends, he says, you know what, I don't think I'm going to let you have it, but I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll put it in the front window, and you put your friends in the car, and you can drive by the house. I'll pull the curtains open, and you guys can look at it from the street through the window. And so it went on, and Jerry said one time he had it. Lamar wanted to show his friends. He said, I'm not giving it to you, but if you send your wife over, she can sign a receipt for it and have it back in a day. So anyway, the Preston Road Trophy, just one of kind of the cool things that I'm looking forward to in this Chiefs game. A lot of other things going on in it. Chiefs are a, what, 2.5-point favorite at home. That's a tight game, man. And an over-under 56 that they're going to fly by.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm not really sure how they came up with the number of 56 because, I mean, those two teams will probably combine for that at halftime.
So that all said, other great games going on. Tonight, you're going to have Patriots-Falcons. Patriots may be the hottest team in football right now.
Yeah, right now New England's kind of cooking, and they look really good. They're running the ball pretty effectively. Game that I'm looking forward to, maybe Sunday, the noon game, Colts-Bills. If you're, again, if you're a Chiefs fan, you're always cheering for the Bills to lose, and the Colts are playing pretty good football right now. That ball game being played at Orchard Park, noon, Buffalo, a 7-point favorite.
And you mentioned the Steelers-Chargers earlier. Steelers are not a good team, and yet the Chargers are only a 6-point favorite at home. Looking for a little Steeler magic here.
Yeah, Sunday 7:20 game, so that should be fun. Monday night does nothing for me, and I'm not sure why they keep putting the Giants on Monday Night Football, but the Giants will travel to Tampa Bay. It'll be Monday, 7:15, Tampa, an 11-point favorite. Bruce Arians, not scoring any good points with his quarterback after that last outing last week.
Just quickly looking at college basketball from the NCAA, Kansas is going to be at TCU. Football. KU's going to be at TCU Saturday. TCU a 21-point favorite. How can you bet against the Jayhawks now?
Telling you, KU after that big win over Texas, I'm a little shocked that they're a 21-point dog against TCU, but hey, it is what it is. Another one I'm not really sure that I understand. Number 11, Baylor is going to be at Kansas State, a 4:30 game. Kansas State, a 1-point favorite.
I tell you something about playing out there at Bill's place, right? Michigan State is going to be at number 4, Ohio State. That's a pretty high-ranked game for a Saturday, 11 a.m., number 7 and number 4. You got Arkansas at number 2, Alabama, Saturday at 2:30. And then the big Saturday night game will be Oregon at Utah. That should be such a dog. I don't know. I'm just not pumped
up for
that.
It just doesn't do anything for me.
Tonight, you got KU at home. They're going to be down at Allen Fieldhouse hosting Stony Brook. Stony Brook is looking to fund the athletic department for the next decade or so on this one. 7 o'clock ball game in. KU is going to be in Orlando over Thanksgiving. They'll be playing North Texas. Our sports schedule looks like this. Saturday, it'll be the Benedict and Lady Ravens here on K-Radio 5:30 ball game hosting College of Ozarks. Next Tuesday, it will be Lady Ravens and Columbia at 5:30. No sports look next week because of the Thanksgiving holiday. We hope you have a great one of those. Sport look sponsors, Taco John's, Gerber Electric, Exchange Bank, and Hamada Wealth Management. Thanks for tuning in. Until next time, for Gus Couch, Tom Couch, so long, everybody.